is Reggie ATL coming to you live from the lovely city of Atlanta with Alyssa DiTommaso here, coming to you via iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and Spotify.
Good job!
Thank you, thank you. It's a new year. I'm turning over a new leaf of being able to name everything, and I'm trying to get on Pandora, but I'm not sure how that's working out. I gotta see. They just started opening up, like always have had podcasts, but I think they're opening up more submissions and stuff. So, you know, we'll see. But I don't know, because it's taking them too long. Even if I do get on there, I don't really care enough to mention it now. I'm already mentioning too many things. I forget the ones now, you know?
Right.
So I can't like mess it up by finally getting that and then adding Pandora. I'm just going to be like, and more.
And many more.
And many, many more. So today we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is business. This is have we done any business episodes, Alyssa?
I think we did one money episode, or we might have briefly gotten into the topic of money on a dating episode.
Okay, so we haven't really gone all the way.
Yes, I remember exactly the episode. We were talking about dating, and you were giving me a hard time because I was like, at this point in my life, I just wouldn't want to date a person who's maybe just starting off working like their first job and it's like a fast food job or something.
So I can't work at a Chick-fil-A and go out on a date?
Do you remember that episode?
I do not.
Okay.
We've done a lot of episodes, Alyssa.
Well, you know, and you were just sitting here ragging on my memory. Look who's pulling up facts now, sir. I got the facts.
You do. And I don't like, you know what's so funny? Is Alyssa, I don't recall it at all. Like, I don't even remember even remotely what you're talking about. We did a lot of dating episodes, didn't we?
Yeah.
Has that changed too in 2019? Now, could a person work at Chick-fil-A?
Goodbye. I'm done with you. You're trying to get a little reaction out of me. You're trying to sidetrack me.
I'm trying to see if maybe now you can accept somebody for who they are.
Let me rephrase that. Yeah, I'll date somebody who works at Chick-fil-A if they own the Chick-fil-A.
Oh my goodness.
Or if they work at Chick-fil-A corporate.
When we were talking off the air, didn't you say that you could, if you got to go out with somebody because you don't know if that is the person, if that is the one meant for you. So you give them the benefit of the doubt. So the one meant for you could be working at Chick-fil-A right now.
Could be. You're right.
Okay. Just remember that when you go to Chick-fil-A next time.
I already had my one love who worked at Chick-fil-A, so I'm not going to double dip in that pool.
Does he still work there?
I don't know. It was from 18 to 21, but...
Oh, wow. Serious. That's a serious amount of time.
Actually, I dated three people who worked at Chick-fil-A.
Well, I can see why you wouldn't. Okay, so now
you've dipped in the pool three times.
You've done your due diligence from a Chick-fil-A standpoint. I don't feel like you should have to go back to that. So we're going to talk about today different aspects of finance here. And... the disclaimer with this episode, and I feel like I have to give it, is there's definitely, because I'm a business nerd, I'm into I listen to Dave Ramsey, and then I'm a business nerd from a standpoint, I've read a lot of books, even like Donald Trump's books. I read his books, The Art of the Deal, and a couple of books he did when those weren't bad books. I mean, you think what you want to think about him as president. Those are actually very good books. So I'm very much into business, and a lot of the advice you might get out there from finance standpoint always needs to come with the disclaimer that if you're listening to somebody give you financial advice, it doesn't necessarily mean that you should put all your money in the stock market now or listen to a lot of these get rich quick schemes. And some of this is sound advice. And that's what I'm going to try to do in this episode, is give kind of sound general advice that I've heard, you know, the Dave Ramsey's of the world kind of give time and time again of what's kind of sound business practices, but they're not literally for everyone. I'm not sure if there's literally a one size fit all, and we'll kind of get into that. So we're going to touch on some quick ways to make cash that people are making cash now. It's knows from a generational standpoint. Then we'll get into money versus happiness. Go into money management after that, and end with doing some investments and stuff like that. So going into the first one here, and we were talking about this a little bit off the air. If we're going into quick ways to make money, then it's a situation where we are kind of in the gig economy now. And I remember you telling me before that you didn't really know that term.
Yeah. So if you could give us a little bit of a definition of what gig economy means.
Okay. So the gig economy is, and I feel like this kind of came to be after the recession in 2008, when we went through the recession in 2008. A lot of people picked up second jobs. So let's go pre-2008, and it might, don't take this to be the pure definition because it could have happened before then. But, you know, you had like your one job.
Right.
And then maybe some people had a side job, right? You might have a neighbor who has a night job, a job maybe they work on the weekends or something like that. Maybe
or like
they,
a trivia host or something.
Right. Something they do once a week or so that, for some extra disposable income. Well, now the gig economy is sometimes people don't even have one full-time job anymore. They have two jobs, and that job might be like an Uber, and they might be doing Uber and they're doing Uber Eats, or they might be doing Lyft and they're also doing Postmates or something like that. You know, so the gig economy is more so like finding different ways. People are finding different ways to make money now that's outside of what the traditional might have been like, hey, this is your traditional 9-to-5, you know? And I feel like maybe that was born out of necessity. You know, being at the 2008 stock market situation was, or 2008 recession, not even stock market. That was more due to the subprime mortgage situation, which kind of had a bleed over in other parts of society. But the 2008 recession situation has made it necessary for people to have more than one source of income.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that's more like what I meant with the term gig economy. I know some of my friends now who just do just Uber or Uber Eats and stuff like that, and they make money doing it. Do you have any friends that are into that?
Yes, I actually back in 2018 tried Uber Eats for all of 2 weeks.
Like you were doing it?
Yeah, I tried to drive for Uber Eats, and I don't want to say I hated it. I didn't really understand the point, and maybe I'm just not a driving or a delivery person, so maybe that's why I just struggled.
How
with
often were
it.
You doing it when you did it?
So at the time I had basically two other jobs, so I was working as a receptionist and I was still kind of trying to find my footing with radio.
So you were doing radio and then
and reception.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh well, let me just pick up some extra hours, like whenever I get off of work at. I was working at a car dealership as a receptionist. I was like, whenever I get off at the car dealership, I'll go do Uber Eats because I would only work there basically on the weekends. So it was like, I would pick up the prime time hours. So like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but I just never really found myself enjoying it. And I didn't like,
so you did it on a few days a week. You said like
yeah,
2 or 3 days a
yeah,
week
I would
or
only
so.
Do it like,
and when then when you were doing it those days, how long on those days?
I would only do it for like from 8 PM to 10 PM.
Oh, so only for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's not, I can imagine you were making much money doing it for such a short period of time. It's like 6 hours a week.
Yeah. I just didn't really like it overall. I didn't like feeling, first of all, I would get sketched out because I feel like a lot of the people who would order Uber Eats, their houses were like, you know, serial killer looking houses, like out
wow,
here in the middle of the woods.
Wow, serial killer looking houses. Goodness gracious.
I don't know. It was weird.
I loved ordering Uber Eats myself. I used to,
order
a lot.
Yeah, I love to order
Uber
Eats.
Do you order
Uber
it
Eats.
Yourself?
Yeah,
Do you feel like you live in a serial killer house?
No, I order Uber Eats. I order DoorDash. I order Grubhub. Wherever I can get food delivered,
right,
I don't
right.
care. Give me
what
the
a time
food.
To be alive, I'll tell you that.
Or to gain weight.
So you said that you weren't really into it, and
the delivery,
you weren't,
like
were you making
driver.
Any money? Because I have a friend who does it, and he does it kind of, he's been doing it now for almost a year, you know, and just doing primarily it. And, you know, on good days, make a couple
yeah,
hundred dollars a day.
I hear that you make more money doing Uber Eats than actually driving people, like
in
giving
Uber?
Rides. So that's why, I mean, you've seen my car. I drive a Fiat, 2-door little car. So it made more sense for me to do Uber Eats anyways. And I don't know, again, if maybe because I was only doing it for 2 hours, but I was doing it during what they're called surge hours. So the pricing was like doubled, or like, because it was like high demand for drivers to deliver. But I still just felt like I wasn't really seeing the gross return of what I thought, you know, would be worth it for me to continue doing it.
Okay. So, if you are a person, then let's say that you're a person and you want to make some quick money, then what is Alyssa going to do? If she's trying to make some quick money, are you going to start stripping? What are you going to do?
Can I talk about that? Yeah. Can I talk about my penny challenge?
Oh, your penny challenge. Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that.
Okay, well, I mean, I really did for a hot second consider stripping for like a hot second and downloaded an article to read. And I read it and I was like, this is not for me. But
what did the article say?
It was just basically giving you tips on how to survive in the industry.
Can you forward that to me?
Absolutely. Yeah. But the penny challenge, I don't know if this is a real challenge, but if it is, hashtag Reg the penny challenge. Let's kind of figure out we can make that a Reg in the ATL penny challenge.
Okay.
And I shared this with you before we even came on, was you're doubling a penny every day for 30 days. So you're starting with 1 cent. Yeah.
Okay.
And you start with 1 cent and then you double it. Like on day two, it gets doubled to two. And then day three, you go to four. And day four, you go to eight, et cetera, et cetera. By the end of a 30-day period, so in the span of roughly 1 month, you can make $5,368,709.12.
Hmm.
So in the span of 1 month, you can go from basically being...
Having a penny, because you can't say penny less.
Yeah.
You have one penny.
On day one, you have a penny.
Okay.
You can go from that to having $5 million. Now,
you know, that sounds so hilarious to me. You know, we talked about this in extensively before, and I was breaking out all kinds of methods of how I feel like. What did I say that we get
really
to like day 10 or 11?
Fail? You really think I'm
no,
going to fail?
No, I think you're going to succeed at anything you put your mind to.
Yeah, Alyssa. You were basically saying how by the time you get to like $5 or $10, it's going to be a struggle to
it starts
double
to get
it.
Suspect because you're really doubling your money every day.
Yeah. So now it's like when we were talking, it's like I came up with the idea of like, well, you have the added layer of like these apps that help you like invest your money into the stock market and you can watch that money grow. So
is that part of the challenge though?
I don't know. There's not any rules or regulations as far as I know.
So you just got to double your money every day.
Right. I mean, God, like, let's use some common sense. And I guess maybe we should do a disclaimer here by saying, hey, let's not, rob people or steal from others, which is the same thing, or assault people for their valued goods. But I mean,
I told you,
I was like, you know, I'll probably on days when I'm like short on money or something, like sell things I know I definitely don't use that I think about selling all the time. Like my
bicycle. Is that part of the challenge? Because we're going to revisit this. And I think the level of success is going to be if we talk to you ever again. So here's what's going to happen. If we never hear from Alyssa ever again,
I made the $5 million.
She has made her $5 million and she's on a yacht somewhere. She has sailed off into the distance.
Yes.
Okay.
But my goal is, and I'm going to try this challenge out and,
how long are you going to try? It needs to be in succession. So you got to have the date, Alyssa.
I'm going to start today.
Today. Okay.
And I'll keep you guys up to date every time I come in and record with you. I'll keep you up to date with
so
what's
the
going
date
on.
For the date of the rec- so are you starting literally today? Because I'm probably not going to air this
tomorrow.
For a week, but I will say
I'll
that
start tomorrow.
The actual date that she's saying is January 17th.
Okay, is
that,
so that
tomorrow? Means tomorrow, January 17th. So we need to touch base then by February 17th. If we have a show on February 17th, you failed. But if there is no show from February 17th on, you've sailed off on a yacht somewhere. You know,
anyways.
Just shoot me a postcard or something to say, yo,
right,
I'm actually on a yacht and haven't been kidnapped or something. You know what I mean?
Right. Because that's a huge fear of mine. But anyway, so we were talking and I think a pretty, even though I don't think I'll be able to hit the 5 million, that'd be great
if
I did.
Don't short yourself.
But I think I told you realistically, like it'd be pretty cool if I ended with like $2,000.
$2,000.
Like a solid $2,000, which actually would get you through day 19. And I know you might be thinking,
even if you get 19 days from now,
yeah, you might be thinking, well, how is it that you go, you're over halfway through the month or through the 30 days and you only have $2,000. But according to newtraderu.com, you really don't start seeing any significant, I mean, $2,000 is a significant value to some people, but you really don't start breaking into like, yeah, the thousands or tens of thousands until day 21. And then by once you get into those bigger numbers, that's when you start like doubling your money significantly. So I'm going to try it. I've got some strategies. I don't want to give them away just yet.
You don't want everybody out there.
Right.
I don't want that 5 million.
Yeah. I got to make sure I can make the 5 million first and then share my success story. But I'm going to try some strategies to see what I can do in order to get as close to that 5 million as possible.
So would you ever do something like, because you've already ruled out the stripping situation, would you ever do like a substitute teacher, or have you ever thought about different little things like that?
Yeah. So I think now in order to be a substitute teacher, you do need to get some sort of certification.
Man, at one point they were letting us all in.
Right. So it's like, I'm not sure if that costs money. I don't know.
So it's not. So if you could though, what if they said it's possible? Would you do it?
I think you only, each county pays you a different rate. So I think I would do it if it was like something like 10, 12 an hour. But
so it would take the money.
But the breakdown, honestly, how much a teacher makes, the breakdown is like literally disgustingly low. How much if you were to break down a teacher's salary to like into an hourly wage, it's like so sad and pathetic. It's like such a small amount.
Well, I dated a teacher, and one of the things I can tell you about teachers is that they are grossly underpaid.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because of all the time spent. So her day looked like she would get up in the morning. Of course, she'd get up at, 6 o'clock
like
in the morning.
Crack the dawn.
Right. She'd get up 6 o'clock in the morning, going to work. She comes home from work. She grades papers, grades tests, and all that stuff to like 8 or 9 o'clock. Okay. She's answering emails from parents and all that other stuff. And she's doing all this up to like 8 or 9 o'clock. So you got to think about if you're literally going to break down how much out from an hourly standpoint, you're not just doing the school day. You know, you're going to literally do from the time you go to the time you're there, you know, because then you're doing your lesson planning and all that other stuff to like 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and do that times like, 5 days a week. And at least they get summers off though, right? You get 2 or 3 months off, and at least that's paid. That helps. I'm not sure if that really completely mitigates it, but I feel like that does help a little bit there. So one of the things I would get into when going with, and I kind of struggle whether to lead the episode with this or not, because I feel like it's such a core part of making money or being financially successful in your life, is trying to figure out whether you're going to have figure out money versus happiness.
And that's such a multi-layered question, because a lot of people, you hear the people where it's like, you've got the saying, oh, money can't buy you happiness. But it's like, well, money can buy you a lot of things that can make you feel happy. But that also is like a multifaceted or layered question, in the sense that happiness is one of those things where if you lead like a, and maybe simple is not the right word, or maybe small-minded might be a little bit of a better word. But if your only goal or your only focus is you see like material items in your life, then money and happiness are synonymous. But if like you're like a deep thinker, or you're not necessarily as focused on the smaller picture or the day-to-day things that, just day-to-day survival, I don't think money necessarily is your ultimate happiness.
So what would you say, because there's been studies done on this, what would you say the dollar amount threshold? They say that after this dollar amount, they do happiness. They measure happiness kind of with dollar amount, right? And they say that after this dollar amount, the level of happiness goes down between this dollar amount and like a millionaire. Or that there's not much discrepancy between the two, I should say. Do you know what that dollar amount is? I'm going to hide it here so you don't see it, because I wrote it down on my notes.
It's not $5,368.
It is definitely not. We'd all be extremely unhappy people.
I honestly, what, $100? I don't know.
No, I'm talking about like a year. Year salary. Let's go with year salary. Oh, so what would you think maybe, the year salary is?
Maybe like $500,000 for the year. I don't know.
$60,000. So the level of happiness between a person that makes $60,000 and a person that makes $120,000 are very much, there's not very much movement between the level of happiness, how happy and fulfilled this person feels in life. There's not much movement between the two. Now, what the study did, well, what I concluded from looking at the study was that with my personal takeaway was that money doesn't bring you happiness, but lack of it brings you sadness. So if you don't, if you're, they could, because they said that once you start to get below that number, there was a correlation between people feeling sad or unfulfilled and stuff like that in their life. So it's very much, it's a mixed question, because if you were to look at that on its surface, you know, you look at that amount and you say $60,000, that's not some unattainable amount of money for a person. So you say $60,000 a year, that's what kind of leads to the happiness level. And if you look at that, you can say that money equals happiness, right? But I guess the point of that study is saying that it's not as much money as you think. And it's not. And a lot of people are probably already there now, you know, right. And then not knowing that, hey, you doubling this amount of money in your life is not necessarily going to lead to an extensive amount of happiness more, because in order for you to make that money, it could lead to a more extensive time commitment for you. So now you make double money, but guess what? You're never home, or you travel 3-4 days out the week. You know what I mean? You, have you ever had a job where you traveled before?
Yeah.
Okay. So for me personally, I don't like jobs like that, because it would seemed exciting at one point, because I had a job where I was traveling for Hewlett Packard, and we were doing we were installing computers in all the Bank of America's. Okay. So I would go to Bank of America, whether it's at a Kroger's or whether it was at a standalone branch, and we would have all the computers and stuff, and I would go in and I would be there pretty much overnight installing all new systems. And I did that for a while. It was a contract job. Okay. And initially going into it, I was like, man, I'm going to be getting to see different places, getting to do different things. I'm excited about it. But what it really was me traveling from hotel to hotel. It wasn't like I'm going into a different city, but I'm really going to a different hotel. Maybe I get some time to go out and see what the area is like, but I know that I'm packing things up tomorrow and moving on, or packing things up a couple of days. I'm moving on to a different place, you know, so that didn't. These are the kind of things that you got to think about. I think if you're thinking about from a fiscal standpoint of what you want out of life financially, the very first thing that you have to figure out is what makes you happy. Figure that out first. Then do the financial portion afterwards, because you can always make more money, but you can't make more time. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Amen to that.
So if you're going to sit, if you're going to prioritize making money over your life, or the decisions that you make when you're going to make the, when you're making the decision of which one you value more, you know, because some people are like, well, forget it. I just want to make as much money as I can. Then I'll worry about being happy later type situation. Just remember that later is not promised, for one. Later might not ever come. And think about yourself later on, and we all have the proverbial deathbed, and as morbid as it is to sound, I guess everybody thinks it's going to end like that. You know, you're going to be very old and gray. Maybe it's 100 years from now and you're on your deathbed and you're thinking about your life and you're thinking, what did I live it the way I wanted to live it? The worst thing in the world for me, when I make these decisions for myself, the worst thing in the world is for me to look back and be like, there are several concessions that I made to make money. I could have a very full bank account, but if I have an extremely long bucket list, or I look back on my life and I think there's a ton of things I would have done differently. I mean, I think there's a lot of people might have certain things they would have done differently, but if there's a ton of them you would have done differently with a full bank account at the end of your life, to me, that's an unsuccessful life, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And we had I gave you the analogy about, not an analogy, but the story about the janitor that worked someplace for 20 years.
Right.
Okay. The janitor works there for 20 years. He's very happy. He lives a very fulfilled life. He likes his family life. He likes where he lives. He's very active socially. He has a great peer group. He loves where he works. He wouldn't work. He could win $1 million the next day and have the same job. He just likes where he works. And then you got a person that's very successful from outside looking in, you know, they might have a fashion brand, they might have movies, they might have music to come out with, they have millions of adoring fans, and they have all the money in the world, and then they end up like committing suicide or something later. When you look at these two lives, which one won in your opinion? And to me, the person who's the janitor, been there for 20 years, they're the one who wins out.
Right. And I think that's a good point to make in regards to how you were saying you can't make extra time and find something that's going to make you happy in life. And even if you, what makes you happy in life doesn't make you a lot of money, doesn't necessarily mean that you can't make a lot of money. And you can really make your money work for you with things like investment, stock markets, things like that. So it really just kind of depends on your mentality or how much you're willing to educate yourself about like financial awareness and financial freedom or things like that.
So where does that happiness level at for you when you just say it or you think about it? Because you're younger, and I feel like when I was in my early 20s, I had a much more superficial view of the world. I definitely thought like, hey, man, if all I got to do is just hit it rich, and if I hit it rich, things would be great. But then you get older and you meet people who are rich and things aren't so great for them.
Right. As in, where do I fall on the scale versus would I choose money or happiness, or where do I fall?
Like where
on
do
what's
you,
the number?
Are you in hustle mode? Or are you like, well, you know, if I got to go take money versus happiness, I'll take 70% money, 30% happiness.
Excuse me. I think you know, but I've always been a hustler and I always will be. It's just in my genetic coding. I love to work and I love to work hard.
Well,
for
then
what
that
I
sounds
have.
Like it's still happiness though, because if you're happy working.
Yeah, I mean, and I say this in all good regards, but I truly believe I'm one of those people that, like, if life were a sitcom, I'm that annoying neighbor that you hate to ask for help, but I love to give my help. And like, you know, when you do ask, you're like, okay, well, I'm glad I asked for the person's help overall, because whatever the project might have been or whatever you need help with, it turned out decent after taking my, like, somebody's advice. But, you know, it's just like, I get so excited to help people. And so if my penny challenge works out and I become a $5 millionaire, anyways, if it works out and I become my $5 millionaire, I'll totally, definitely, always, forever help people. Free of charge.
Is that like an answer to the question? I don't even feel like that's like something like a whole different statement right there.
I don't know what you want me to say. Like, I just, to me, I mean, I don't know. I just, yeah, I'm happy working. And like, I think that is my answer. I love to work and I'm happy because it's like, I'm doing something, like, even if it's a contracted job.
So what is something that you wouldn't want to do?
Would not?
Yeah. What is a job that just doesn't interest you?
I don't know. I haven't come across a job that I wouldn't.
You're interested in every job on earth.
There's a purpose.
You want to work?
Every...
Do you want to work in the sewers? Like if I said, hey, you can work, or let's say you want to be a coal miner.
There's a purpose for every job.
The purpose for every job, but there's not a purpose for every job, but every person.
Well, yeah. And I mean,
so let's say coal miner, let's just choose coal mining in general. And they say, hey, listen, we're going to pay you. You can go to the coal mines of West Virginia right now. And we're going to pay you $200,000 to go out there, but you have to be there for 10 years. It's going to be $2 million at the end of the day. You got to be there for 10 years. Would you do it?
I wouldn't do it under the circumstances of, I know nothing about coal mining. And, I don't think you said, what was the amount of money?
200 grand.
That's not enough money in 10 years for something.
No,
like
I'm
that.
Saying 200 grand per. So you just 2 million.
Oh, per year. Okay.
But you have to be there. You can't just take your 200 grand after a year. You got to be there for 10 years.
Oh, I don't know. I'm the type of person, I think really the ideal job for me. And I think that's why I love like radio and like podcasting, is because it kind of allows my brain to, or I guess maybe that's why people like acting, but they get to portray or play a different role every day, or they get to try something different every day because their role is to try something different. And the ideal job for me, I guess, would be to be able to try like a different profession every day.
So if you have a job like that and it doesn't pay you nearly as much, you take it?
Take the job
that you really want. Because it sounds to me as if you are kind of making your choice. If you know that you wouldn't take one job for X amount of dollars, then you wouldn't choose the money over happiness because you're not taking the money.
Right. And I think more so in my brain, that type of job works as I would get paid equitably. Like, what is the correct amount of pay? Not like, oh, your job is to try a bunch of jobs and get paid one salary for that. I would want to be paid fairly what like a person who works in that career path, how much they would get paid. If that makes sense. I don't know.
I think everybody wants to be paid fairly. I think it's a different question to kind of think about what you'd want to do and then pursue that, even though that might not be as much money as something that you wouldn't want to do. I don't think anybody, no matter what profession they choose, I'm not sure if anybody signs up to say, pay me unfairly, or if anybody signs up to say, listen, lowball me to death, please. I would. Nobody wants to be lowball. Everybody wants to be treated with respect, especially from a fiscal standpoint, you know?
Right.
So let's go into kind of money management here. All right.
My favorite topic.
Is it your favorite?
Budgeting.
Do you?
And I love money management. I love it.
Really? What do you love about money management?
It's just like, you know how some people like to clean to calm down, like when they're angry or like when they're like stressed out? Money management does that for me.
So you like to balance a ledger. You're like, hey, let me just go ahead and
balance my every month. I still balance my checkbook every month.
Do you have a checkbook?
Yep.
You have a physical checkbook.
Yep. And I write down all my purchases in it. And
do you ever write checks?
I've written like 2 checks in my entire life.
Okay. I haven't seen a checkbook in like 5 years. Outside of business standpoint, like I had one when I had a business, I had a checkbook for business.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just something about the idea of making a budget and holding yourself accountable to keeping the budget. Like that just like, it's so exciting to me. I love the idea of money management.
Really? Are you good with money?
I would say I'm better than most people. And I think that's partially a little bit of my upbringing because my dad was a CPA. And
oh, that helps a ton.
And my grandpa worked for the IRS. So I feel like I had 2 people who really were hounding me about money, like money management, good financial knowledge. But sometimes I feel like they kind of failed me because the things that are like important now as an adult, I'm like, I have no idea about like the stock market, or I have no idea about interest rates, or like, you know, how to grow my money aside from just saving it. And I know that's not the best answer either.
Well, it's different, and we will definitely touch on that. I think with money management, money management is so important because it's something that's always in your hands. Okay. Sometimes you can't control how much money you make, but you can control how much money you spend.
Absolutely.
Okay.
100% agree.
If you manage your money, and it's something I hammer in the head of my daughter, and she's actually started off pretty decent at this because I told her, I try to teach my daughter about these things in households. If you have children or if you have a family that you have somebody in your family that can kind of give you this advice, it helps a ton because a lot of times when people don't get this advice in their house, they kind of grow up inept in these
like
categories.
$50,000 worth of debt.
Exactly. Out the gate because they're just making horrible decisions. So for one, let's start with spending what you can afford versus spending what you think people want to see you in. And that can be cars. This stretches across different genres.
Yeah,
this is kind of
like
a keeping up with the Joneses
type
situation.
Absolutely.
Just remember this. Like if you are, I feel like there's nothing wrong with splurging on things that you can afford. Okay. If you can afford to buy it, there used to be somebody on TV. Her name was Susie Orman. I'm not sure. And she used to do a show. I'm not sure if it was on CNBC, but it was on a while back ago. And she used to do this little segment in her show where people would call in and ask if they could afford to buy certain things. And she'd run over their finances and let them know if they could afford it or not. And, it's a great segment. And if everybody had a person like that in their ear, that people would probably be a lot more, you know, fiscally healthy than they are, because I know that we all tend to make impulse buys, or we tend to my daughter suffers from retail therapy. She basically, if she's feeling bad, something bad happened. She's a bad day. She wants to go spend money to make herself feel better.
I did not get into that habit until probably 23 or 24.
Buying stuff to make you feel better?
I am a stickler with my money. Like, I'm very strict about what I spend my money on. And again, I think it's partially my background, but yeah, I never, ever, ever. Like, I feel like the best splurge you can give yourself is having, like, you know, having that money for a rainy day. But right. I think that's my mentality. I don't think about necessarily like the material items today that can make me happy. I'm like, knowing that I have like financial, like, you know, a safety net in case of an emergency makes me happy.
Well, I feel like those are things that you have to kind of identify too. And going back to the last subject of kind of like the money versus happiness is one of the things you got to identify is what your long-term goals are. Now, me, I'm the kind of person who's always, I've never wanted to buy houses and stuff of that nature. It's never appealed to me because when I was fortunate enough when I was young to go through that with my daughter's mother. We had the house and everything was brand new. Went through the whole thing and all that stuff. The whole like excitement of looking for a house, the excitement of closing on a house, buying it, and all that stuff. And I think everybody is something that everybody should go through. I'm definitely glad that I got that experience out of the way because I saw it's not for everybody. Sometimes you have like the American dream, right? And it says, you know, you get the house, you get the car and all that other stuff, and it's gonna make you feel great. But the craziest feeling in the world for me was obtaining a lot of that and not getting the sense of fulfillment, you know? And that's kind of what comes particular to each individual. That's one of the things that you have to figure out. So don't get caught up in what you feel the American dream is, what you feel your parents might want you to do, what you feel like your friends might want you to do. Identify what you want to do first. Maybe that is what you want. Maybe you want to buy a house, start a family, have a couple cars. Maybe you're into classic cars. Maybe you want to buy nothing but cars and live in a smaller place. Maybe you don't care about your car. Maybe you want to prioritize having a place with a nice yard, but figuring that out first and foremost can help you. When it comes to managing money, I manage money for the last 5 to 10 years. I manage for freedom. And what that is for me, managing for freedom is freedom from ever being beholden to a certain job is what my ultimate life goal is.
Right. Well, and I always kind of live by the philosophy of kind of it's better to live below your means than above your means. Because again, like you mentioned, like some people are out here trying to keep up with the Jones. I'd rather people think I'm piss poor and broke on the outside, but I'm much more well off because at the end of the day, a lot of things, like to me, even a car is a necessity. There's no need. I understand they have luxury vehicles and sometimes it's like, that's what people like and that's what they want. So that doesn't mean though, and some people, they do get caught up in the, oh, well, because I have this nice car, I have to have a house that matches, or because I have this nice house, I have to have a car that matches. And it may not be in your current financial forecast. So don't go crazy. And that's the thing. Like a lot of things, I know I used to work in the automotive industry. We would receive basically like big data, like, oh, this person just bought a house. And statistical trends show like, because this person just bought a house, they're also going to most likely be interested in buying a car.
Upgrading your whole life.
Yeah. So like we would send these people blast emails basically of like deals we have going on for cars. So it's like, it's just, I don't know. It's just one of those things that it blows my mind. And again, I've always been okay with, and I've always been an advocate for, as long as it meets my essential needs in life, like there's no need for me to go splurge above and beyond. And it helps me with like my whole, how you want to live for freedom. That's for me, that's, I want to live for my freedoms. So.
Yeah, I definitely, being that I have friends on different sides of the socioeconomic scale, I have people that are very well off, have done very well for themselves. And then I know people who are struggling a bit. I would never demonize my friends that are the haves over the have nots. There's not like the people that are have nots possess some kind of dignity that the people who are the haves don't possess, you know, because people tend to demonize the rich, or they tend to demonize people who are doing very well for themselves. A lot of times these people have worked very hard to get where they're at. you know, they deserve their money. They deserve the success that comes with them spending extra time that other people do not spend to get to a certain place. You just have to, you just can't get caught living somebody else's dream, in my opinion, and then paying the financial price for that.
Right.
You know, so keeping your expenses low allows you to not have to, or managing your money well allows you to not have to think about stuff. Like, I don't want to think about, so I don't want to have to think about when I go out to the store, I don't want to think about a price. I want to make a good purchasing decision, but I feel like making a good purchasing decision is not the same thing as thinking about a price. Like, if you go and there's like a miniature size Snickers, no matter how much money you have in your bank account, you don't want to pay $5 for it. When you're like, man, I can get 10 of these for $1. You know, I could have, do I have the $5? Of course I have the $5. Does that mean I want to make that purchasing decision just because I have it? No, I want to make a good choice. But at the same time, when I go to the store or if I go out to a certain restaurant, I don't want to get caught up having to make sure I keep my order under a certain amount. I want to be able to have the financial freedom to go in and get what I want. Or, you know, if I'm there with somebody, I don't want to be sweating bullets as they're looking at the menu thinking like, man, I hope they don't order that because it's going to be water and appetizer for me at that point, you know? So if you manage your money well, if you keep your expenses low, these are things you won't have to worry about. And then you can aspire towards, making that bigger purchase in your life. You're looking to get a house and you're looking to get a new car, a new house and all that stuff. You can aspire towards making these purchases instead of working backwards, making those purchases first. And now you got to pick up a second job, or now you got to see your loved ones less, or now you get into these cars and these houses. And as you're in them, you're thinking about like, this isn't as good. It doesn't feel as good as I felt it would, you know, right. And I'm paying for the privilege. I'm paying for that privilege, you know? So one of the things that we were talking about, even when we were talking about the whole penny challenge, and you touched on it a bit just now, was investments and stuff like that. And you said that you never really learned about that. Did your parents not have investments? Because you said they were like, your dad was like a CPA, right? Did he prioritize budgeting?
I'm pretty sure they have. I don't know any. It's not my business, and that's always kind of been known. Like, you know, that's their private, like their financial stuff is that.
Right. They're not going over their portfolio with you at the dinner table.
I know that they have investments, but no one's ever really sat down and tried to explain, or they've explained it, but we've talked about how my brain works, and I need a lot of help when it comes to some things. And this is one of those topics where I kind of need like the pamphlet plus a handout plus a video where I have to fill the blanks on the handout plus a word search and then like a live reenactment to really truly understand what.
So what is your, what do you think investments are now? Just even if it's like a primitive definition, what is Alyssa thinking when she thinks of investments? What does she think of?
Initially it's something you're putting a portion of your money into that should grow itself without you having to consistently, like a savings account is not an investment. I mean, it's an investment because you're saving your money, of course, but it's not an investment that's growing itself, if that makes sense. Is that right?
I mean, well, a savings. So if you, the investments work kind of like this, and this is like, I'm just going to be very kind of crude definition of how they work. But the way that I look at investments are short-term, long-term investments. Okay. One thing that I tend to know does not work or rarely ever works. And if people tell you this, you should run for the hills, or it should be like hitting the lottery, is money overnight or quick money schemes.
Yes, I do know that. That stuff does not work.
Stay away from those, because even if you do find a quick money scheme, just remember this, just as quick as you make it, you can usually lose it as quick in those situations. Right. And you don't want to get into a situation where somebody talks to you and say, hey, you can make 80% on your money. You know, if people are telling you, if somebody tells you that you can make 20 to 25% back, you have a very good investment. Like, that's a very good amount of returns on your money. Right. So if somebody waltzes into your life and they say, hey, we can double your money, or hey, you're going to make 75-80% of your money back, you need to, the antennas need to go up. You need to be very cautious about making investments with said individual or said company.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So if you're looking, so now let's get into kind of like what your shorter and long-term plays are, kind of thing. So if you're looking, and the kind of life you want. So let's say a person says, hey, I want to make investments, but they want to be kind of hands off with the investment, you know, hands on investment, maybe be like, might be like a business. Let's say that you're a CPA and you work 10 to 15 years for a company, and then you decide you want to open your own company. That's, you could take your earnings, you know, maybe you put away for like, you know, the different expenses that are going to be, that are going to go along with you opening your own company. And then you invest that money into a building, and then you get all the, respective licenses and stuff like that, or appropriate licenses. And then you hire staff, and then you decide to open a business, and you're kind of running your business. It's still an investment. You've still made an investment, but you've invested in yourself, and you've invested in kind of like, it's more of a hands-on investment because you're going to be there every day, but it's a better play for you in the long term versus just working for somebody else forever. Okay. Then you can take a more hands-off investment, which is more like, and even that, none of these, I don't feel like, when I say short-term in investment time can be like 3, 4, 5 years. Just so let's get an idea of what short term means. Long term is usually like, you know, your 10, 15 year plays. You're going to put it into like maybe like bonds or something like that. And you're looking to kind of play that out for a longer term investment.
Yeah, that's why like that's like good for what, like kids. Like I know like a lot of like I know like my grandparents, like they put like a little bit of money aside, and basically when each of my siblings and I were born, to like give us a bond as their legacy for when they pass.
Right. Because that's going to grow over time, you know, right. But it takes time for it to grow. You know, if you're looking to make money in the next 3 years, these things might not be as good for you. Now, the playing a stock market, the way that can work is if you're investing in stocks that are going to make you more money quicker, they're probably riskier stocks. You know, your stocks that are involve less risk usually make more money over time, but they don't bring you as much money. Like you might not be making as much money over time.
So let me ask you this question. With the whole penny challenge, I know I briefly mentioned to you, once I get to a certain amount, I'm going to kind of half that and put some of it into like the stock market, even though it's a very small amount. But I really don't know how stocks work. I don't know anything about the stock market. I don't even know how to read like stock reports. Like mm-hmm. I don't know any of that. So what, like, could you go into a little bit further detail in regards to like risky stocks versus how do you know what a risky stock is, or like a stock that's a guaranteed for, or like a safety stock?
So any stock broker, and there's a lot of different ways now. You can, I think, with like E-Trade and a lot of other different things that you can do online, it makes it like where you don't have to necessarily go and talk to a stockbroker or a commodity trader or anything like that. You can do a little bit of research on your own. But any person who is going to advise you to get into this market is going to let you know there's no such thing as guaranteed gains. It just does not exist. Now, you look at some traders, and if you were to look at what their if you look at their history, their track record, they can say, man, if you're looking at somebody who's traded for, let's say, 10 years, just do a number like that, 10 to 15 years. And they've had gains, you know, the stocks that they've picked stocks for you. They've suggested that you invest in these particular funds that might have several different stocks in them. Then you can look over that 10 to 15 year period. If they had gains, you know, then you can say, okay, that's great. But no trader in that 15 year period, usually a person who's kind of like a con artist, or you can look at irregularity, means they never had, it never lost money ever in life. You know, the people who are the most successful people on earth at trading the stock market have ups and downs, you know, because the stock market goes up and down. That's why it's a long-term play, okay? So if you're investing in stocks, Alyssa, I would tell you this. Invest in certain funds, but invest knowing, go in with a certain mind state. And that certain mind state needs to be, I'm going to have this money in the stock market for a long time. Okay. Don't go in thinking that you're going to be able to put money in the stock market and then take it out 5-6 months later and make money. It's not to say that you can't, because they're day traders. They're people who trade stocks every day and they make money. But these people are professionals and they're professional risk takers. Understand the risk that comes with it. If you're a person that's worked all your life to save up a nest egg and then put it in the stock market, you need to be investing in safer stocks. And I'm not a stockbroker, so I wouldn't be the person to talk to recommend certain stocks to you. But there are definitely like your stocks like Apple and Amazon that were all great at one point, and if people had gotten in, they would have had gains on those, you know, that, and they still make more money later than what they put in, even though there can be heavy fluctuation in the market.
Right.
I feel like if you invested, have you ever had these, you read these stories where they say, hey, if you had invested $1,000 in Apple 10 or 15 years ago, it'd be worth this now.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't understand. Like, yeah. I okay. just don't understand. Cause again, it's not really like, I feel like in this regard, investments and stocks are kind of like a foreign language to me in the finance world.
So what they're saying is that where the practical knowledge of that breaks down is the economy and things over that period of time have gotten better. Kind of like, you know, how they say housing prices, you buy a house at one price. And then unless it's an anomaly, like the recession situation was when you dealt with subprime mortgages and that caused housing prices to fall and all the other stuff. They tend to go up because the economy, you know, things tend to cost more. Like it's really easy when you look at it on the surface. As 10 years ago, bread cost less. Everything cost less. Everything costs more 10 years later. So look at the stock market like that. If you put money in when things were trading at a certain dollar amount, barring a disaster for a certain company, you know, barring like a pharmaceutical company where they might lose a certain medicine, or they might find out that a medicine that was great at one point, they did more research and now it finds out it kills people. And now that stock's going to tank, you know, you're going to lose a lot of money on it. Right. Barring something serious like that, if you're dealing with safer companies over that period of time, is why it's such a long-term play. Over that period of time, you're probably going to make some money. How much money you make is going to depend a little on how much money you have in the stock market. How much money did you decide to dedicate to that? You know, if you make that investment, let's go 100%. Let's say you got 100 grand and you can invest 100 grand. It's all your savings and all that other stuff. The suggestions I tend to see from people is to not put all your money in anything.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? You put some in the stock market. Maybe you put some in mutual funds, maybe. And it depends. That's going to depend more on the individual and depend on how much your tolerance to risk, because don't get me wrong. Some people take risk and they're very much rewarded for it. You know, they invest in riskier stocks. They invest in stocks that are fluctuating very highly or lowly. So they might got in when it was super low, like a recession. A lot of times, if you're in a recession or if there's like a sell-off on a stock or you see the stock market's down, that's usually a good time to buy. Just don't look at it the next day. Like, buy it and then look at it a year from then. More than likely, if the company is in decent fiscal health and management's good on that company, then it's going to be trading higher than what you purchased it at. You know, I would tend to stay away from fads or with companies that are just doing sometimes IPOs are good because that company's just being offered on the stock market. It's its first buying price. They're just now initial public offering is what it's called. And they're just now listing themselves on the stock market. So when you do that, if a company comes in, let's say like Facebook did a years back, you know, Facebook's a good company, but it wasn't being traded on the stock market. So then Facebook does what's called an IPO. An IPO is the price that set for them when they very first start trading. Some people are very good at jumping in on these, right? Especially if the company's good, you jump in and you're getting it at a certain price. This works for some people, Alyssa, but doesn't work for all because there's different fluctuations. Maybe that company's not as good as you thought it was. You know, maybe it was like a lot of hype in the beginning, you know? But these are things that you can talk to stockbrokers about. And I would say instead of trying to become a stockbroker yourself, talk to an expert. talk to some and become an expert on finding good people to talk to. You know, look at what their track record is. Look, and a lot of times they're going to give you what's called a prospectus and all that other stuff. Do your research online. We live in an information age now where you can do enough research on a person or a company to know if they're on the up and up, if they're kind of just selling you a bill of goods, if they're telling you they're going to make you money, if they're telling you they're going to make you money in the stock market over like a year, then it needs to be red flags. Learn to look for the red flags instead of trying to become an investment guru yourself, because these people have spent 20, 30 years on mastering this stuff. And by the time you get up to a certain nest egg, maybe you'll have other friends who have investments. Talk to them, see who they go through, and then still do your due diligence and don't look for somebody who's trying to sell you some kind of get money fast kind of scheme. You know, I think you'd be all right there.
Right.
Are you going to invest your penny challenge money? Is that what are you looking at?
Yeah, so I think that's partially a little bit of my strategy, but we've got a little bit of time left over. So I just kind of wanted to, you know, ask you a couple last questions or what you would recommend for like a first time or a recent, like, you know, a first timer, like, you know, a person maybe getting their first job, like a young person, mm-hmm. or, you know, what some words of encouragement would be like for starting off or for first saving your money for the first time. Like, what would you recommend?
I would say first thing you need to do is save up a certain amount of money and focus on what your goals are. So if you're a person that's just graduating high school, if you have the privilege of being able to stay at home and stack your money. Don't be too anxious to just jump out here in the world and pay bills and stuff if you don't have to. Now, some people you don't have that luxury, you know. And I moved out when I was 18. The day after I graduated high school, I moved out. But I feel like the people, if you're able to save up money in a bank account, you know, let's just go the very simplest thing that any person can do. Okay. Of course, I'm assuming that you've gotten a job. So you need to get employment somewhere. You need to get some kind of job. But the kind of job you get doesn't nearly matter as much as the amount of money that you save. You're spending is going to mean more than anything else. OK, so you're living with your parents. Maybe they're charging you a small amount of rent. And even for the parents that are out there, for the kids that are out there paying their parents rent, if you think that you're paying anything near what an actual apartment would cost, you're not.
Oh, absolutely.
You are not paying. If they're saying, hey, we're going to charge you $200-$300 and you're thinking, oh, my God, I'm being charged money for rent. Believe me, you're not going to get any place for that amount of money that your parents are charging you. You know, so what you're going to need to do is you get a job. You save as much money as you can. And now once you get over, because it's easy to save up $2,000 or $3,000 in a bank account when you're not paying any bills.
Oh, yeah.
OK, you can save up $2,000 or $3,000 in the bank account. So once you got the money saved, now you're going to start getting to the point where you want to make decisions on what do you want to do in life? Some people want home ownership and they want it very early. There's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want. Now you get into the point where you're identifying what is a big purchase you want to make? Maybe you want to buy a car outright. Maybe you want to save up to buy a little a townhouse or a condo or something like that and kind of start your home ownership life off. That's not a bad way to start, because a lot of times if you can start to get home ownership early, you can build equity, you know, in a home early.
Do
you
like
know?
Rental properties.
Yeah, too. Exactly. You can make decisions, but I feel like with the biggest thing you want to do before you start thinking about how you're going to invest your money is work and save money. Do that very first. That's the very first thing you should do. And putting it in a savings account is not the best way to make money. It'll take you an eternity. So don't look at a savings account as a way to make money. Look at a savings account as just that. It's just an account where you have your savings. It might make you some money, but it's not a money making venture. Savings account right. aren't money making ventures.
Right.
You know, it's just a place for you to put your money. And I definitely would recommend you having one if you're going out and you're just starting. having an account where you spend your money, because I have two bank accounts. And one thing I have definitely noticed that makes a big difference with having two bank accounts is that out of sight, out of mind is a real thing.
Absolutely.
It is a real thing. Like if you're looking at one account balance and you don't see that other account balance, it definitely helps. It definitely helps. So even if you have two bank accounts and you're deciding to put 80% in one account and 20% in another, if I'm just spending, like I said, I'm just going to spend the 20 to 30% and I'm going to put 80 to 70% in another account that just kind of stays there. You know, it helps. It helps. You're making all your purchasing decisions off the 20, 30%. What you're already doing is teaching yourself a better way to think fiscally throughout your life. You're putting yourself in a better habit.
Gratification. Yeah. It's right, kind of absolutely. Like a delayed gratification.
Because you're not looking at the whole dollar amount and making purchases. You're looking at 20, 30%. And it's making you think about the purchase. Even if you just have another roadblock that makes you think about purchases that you're making, then that helps. So I would definitely start there.
All right. I guess I'm going to sign us off today. This has been Reg in the ATL. Peace.
See ya.